That's for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here. I know that we got a little bit of an odd schedule this week, but because of Father's Day and a couple other things, we just decided to move the episodes around a little bit. But nevertheless, thank you guys for coming back. Hoping to give you guys another great show, and to help me with that, I brought back Josh Wilson from Stampede Blue. Josh, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, nice to be back on the show. Always a pleasure to be talking Colts with you.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. Sad to hear the news that Josh will be stepping away from Stampede Blue. If you guys hadn't heard that or didn't know that already, that's a real shot to Colts coverage, to be honest with you. Josh has always been one of the best, and he's kept Stampede Blue more than above water and always had them bringing really quality Colts analysis. So from myself to all the other Colts fans and everybody who's ever read your work, Josh, we thank you for what you've done, and we're all, you know, happy for you and your new adventures, but sad to see you go.
Well, I mean, I really appreciate that, and it's been a pleasure, a privilege. I mean, I can't begin to describe how amazing it's been. I love it. I love, you know, the Colts, love covering the team. It's been a dream come true, and it's really been awesome. I mean, I'm sure you would agree with this. I think the best part of my job is honestly just being able to inform and discuss and talk about Colts with fans. It's Absolutely. Amazing. We've got some really knowledgeable fans that care deeply about the team, and to be able to play some part in informing them and in discussing the team with them is amazing. That's the best part of my job for sure, and I'll miss it.
Absolutely. It is. And that's why I asked you when I first heard about it, you know, how are you going to handle this? Because that's going basically from, you know, constantly discussing it to almost not doing it at all. I mean, other than, you know, the conversation I'm sure you'll still be having with fans and stuff on Twitter. Nobody will take anything away from the fact that simply you're not writing anymore. It'll just be, you know, that you aren't writing anymore. But it's that's going to be a strange transition, I would assume, for you. That would be like walking out into the light after being stuck in a basement for, you know, months on end. It'd be a whole new world.
Yeah, I think I'm really just bracing myself for training camp. I think that's really when it's going to hit, because I love training camp. That's one of my favorite times of the year. And I can just imagine, you know, sitting at home during training camp, you know, not being there out on the field or out with the media and everything. I'm going to miss that. And that's probably when I'll miss it the most, is this year in training camp, where I'll be like, oh, this is interesting. I'm not actually covering a new season.
Right. Yeah. Maybe that'll bring you some new perspective, though, because it's been a while since you've just been a fan.
It's been several years. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to that part of it, and I'm sure it's going to be interesting and different. But I, you know, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm excited about some of the next steps I have in life. But I'm sure there's going to be some times where I miss it. If nothing else, just miss sharing my thoughts and having people listen to them. I mean, that's always nice, you know.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, that. But you're right, I'll still be around on Twitter, still be around discussing all things Colts, interacting with fans. I'll still be around there, but it'll be different, not writing, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's good that you'll still be around. We'll still be hitting you up for your thoughts on everything else. But so let's get into the Colts offseason and kind of talk. What do you think about their offseason program? Is there anything that you saw or heard that really kind of stuck true to you? I mean, I think that the Luck injury stuff's been a little overplayed as far as, like, nationally. I think locally we've kept a little more even keel on our assessments of what we expect from him and stuff like that. And not only that, but it seems like nationally everybody was freaking out, you know, that, you know, everybody's scared to death. Luck's not coming back, you know, and I just don't think that's the case at all. But if there's anything else, maybe the Clayton Gethers injury issues or anything like that. But within the training camp or within mini camp or OTAs, was there anything of substance that really stuck out to you?
Well, I always think when it comes to OTAs and mini camp, the first thing I always look for is injuries and injury updates, because on-field performance is so fickle when it comes to off-season evaluation. I mean, it's hard to truly tell anything from practices, so I always look for injuries first. I mean, Andrew Luck and Clayton Gethers and some of those other guys, I think that's really one of the biggest takeaways we can have. And I think the Gethers injury is probably more significant in terms of when's he going to be back than Andrew Luck. I mean, but it, I mean, Luck's the franchise player, so I totally get all that coverage.
Right.
But I think at this point, I really think training camp is when we start to question when Luck gets back. If he's not throwing middle toward the end of training camp, I mean, he might be throwing, but if he's not looking like he's anywhere close during training camp, that might be when there's some questions that start to come in. But now I think it's just a waiting game. Gethers, I mean, it's anybody's guess at this point. When he returns, there's really no clear indication.
Right.
So some of those injuries, I think, are the clearest takeaways. But then on the field, I think what you're looking for are those guys that really catch the attention. So, I mean, I'm sure you've discussed many of the names, you know, like Dante Moncrief or Chester Rogers or several of those other names. So those are just guys on the offensive side of the football that have stood out. And on the defensive side, I mean, you've got a number of players. I just listened to, I don't know if you heard, Bob Lamy did an interview with Chris Ballard at the end of minicamp. And Ballard mentioned over a dozen names of guys he was interested or impressed with from minicamp and the offseason program. And so those are the guys that I think really stand out. Not so much that, oh, well, they impress in the offseason, so they're for sure going to make the roster and have a huge impact in the season. But these are the guys we should be watching more closely in training camp to see what they can do, watch more closely in preseason to see how they continue to progress. So those guys that you hear about in the offseason program who they really, really stood out, that's great. Those are the guys we're going to keep an eye on moving forward to see if they can continue that. Because it's one thing to do it in the offseason in shorts. It's another thing to do it when it gets to preseason in a game setting or in training camp with more, hopefully, live tackling. It's another thing to do it there. So I think probably my biggest takeaways that I try to stick with in the offseason are injuries and then performance, to the extent that those are the guys that we're really going to watch and keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a sneaky fun camp battle that I'm really looking forward to. I mean, there's several, and I'll get to a couple more because I want to hear what you're interested in specifically as well. But Stephen Morris, Scott Tolzien. I think that it was you and I talking, or maybe it was George, I'm not sure, but I spoke about this a while ago. Like, I don't want to go into training camp and have to write or continue to talk over and over about who looked better between Stephen Morris and Scott Tolzien in training camp without Luck, you know, if Luck doesn't do much. But that is one of the sneakier camp battles in there. I mean, Scott Tolzien's obviously more expensive, and we saw what we, you know, saw from Stephen Morris last year, that we thought that maybe he offers more to the offense with being able to get outside the pocket. Accuracy, he's got a stronger arm, you know, stuff like that. Does that interest you in any way, shape, or form?
Oh, absolutely. I think the backup quarterback spot is one that is probably not talked about enough this offseason, in the sense that there's a really real competition going on there. And I think a lot of people just assume that Tolzien's going to be the guy there because he was it last year. He's the veteran presence. I'm not sure that's the case. Stephen Morris, I thought, outplayed Tolzien last year in the preseason and in training camp by a pretty significant margin. And then the Colts seem really impressed with Philip Walker, the undrafted player out of Temple. They've mentioned his name several times. And one of the things, too, that I look for are those guys that either Chuck Pagano, Chris Ballard, whoever it might be, brings up unprompted. So a guy that when they're asked just a whatever question it might be and they bring up another guy's name, that's really what I'm interested in. Last year, for example, Chester Rogers and Edwin Jackson were two of those guys that caught my attention because they were mentioned unprompted, and they both wound up making the roster and then having some contributions. Well, this year, Chuck Pagano was asked, I think it was a question about Anthony Walker, if I'm remembering right, and he turned it into a response about Philip Walker, the quarterback. And I'm like, interesting that that's where he keeps going. And so even him, I think, will have a shot at winning that backup quarterback battle. So I think that will be very interesting to look at. And hopefully the first team reps this offseason help Tolzien get more adjusted to the offense and make it a better position battle. But I really think that's going to be something that we have to keep an eye on in training camp and preseason for sure.
Absolutely. Another one, and we kind of just go down the positions here. Running back. I mean, that ultimately, I think that we're pretty safe assuming, despite the competition mantra with everything, that Gore Turbin and Marlon Mack are all safe on the roster. Then you get to Troy Maine Pope, Josh Ferguson, Dalton Crossan, and I mean, they continued to mention Crossan, you know, in the offseason right after they brought him in. I haven't heard Ferguson's name once. And Troy Maine Pope was brought in when Christine Michael was put on IR. So that, I mean, interesting is kind of about what it brings. But you kind of wonder if one of those guys kind of offers something to this offense to where, not that they find a significant role or anything like that, but to where they could be something throughout the season where everybody's going, man, I didn't even know if he was going to make the team. And he's actually getting some snaps. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you mentioned Crossan, his name's been brought up a lot. And then even Josh Ferguson, in that interview I mentioned with Bob Lamy that Chris Ballard did last week, he said he was very impressed with Ferguson this offseason. It was Ferguson and Turbin were the guys that he thought really stood out. And then he mentioned Crossan at the end of that as well. So I think even Ferguson, you know, I liked him a lot last training camp. I thought he could bring a lot. And then he just got derailed by drops. And so if they're looking for that change of pace guy, which it seems Marlon Mack's going to be that, well, then they might give Ferguson a look. So, you know, I think they've got different options, and it probably depends on kind of what they're looking for with that fourth back and if they do keep four. Because, you know, Gore's kind of he's just your starter. He's going to get some reps. He's going to be your main workhorse. Turbin is going to be still your short yardage and goal line guy, but he's probably going to see some more reps in other situations as well. And then Max, your change of pace guy. Well, then what do you want from that fourth guy? It's probably going to come down to a lot of special teams contributions and things like that. But I think, you know, and it's not guaranteed they're going to keep a fourth guy. But if they are, I think it's completely up in the air from those three guys you mentioned. I mean, just pick one, and that's as good of a guess as any.
Yeah, I agree. We get to the wide receivers. You know, do you think Dorsett's kind of sat himself out of – I'm not even sure how I want to put it, but being out with just the hamstring, you know, that it seemed when Kiefer interviewed him, it seemed like it was, I'm good now. You know, well, then why weren't you in minicamp? You know what I mean? And it kind of seems like that's, I don't know, that seems a little iffy to me. It almost seems like he's relaxed, a little too relaxed to be assuming that he's a lock on this roster with all the height, athleticism, and speed that a lot of these unknown wide receivers are going to bring to training camp.
I think you're absolutely right in suggesting that he's not a lock at all. And I think some people tend to assume that he might be because, you know, he was a first-round pick a couple of years ago. Well, that was with a different GM a couple of years ago. I don't think that's going to guarantee him anything. And I think he's been passed this offseason, to be quite honest with you. I think he's right now considered to be the fifth wide receiver on the roster. Yep. I think you got T.Y. Hilton, Dante Moncrief, Kamar Aiken, and then Chester Rogers, who's really impressed this offseason and made a lot of plays. I think Dorsett at this point is considered to be the fifth one. And I even wrote an article about that not too long ago. I keep mentioning that interview that Ballard did last week, but he mentioned those four guys. It's like, and that competition for the fifth spot is going to be pretty intense or whatever. And he's like, you know, Dorsett made some good plays when he was out there. And he's like, well, I really shouldn't say just for the fifth spot. But it was pretty clear that that was the way he was thinking. And so I think if Dorsett is at this point considered to be the fifth guy, even if there's competition for those spots 2 through 5, whatever it might be, even if he's considered to be that, he's lost some ground, and he shouldn't be taking anything for granted right now, because with all those undrafted receivers and some of the young guys that got in there, I would not be shocked at all if Dorsett's not on the roster come week one. It's just he's going to have to earn his spot, and that'll be interesting to see in preseason if he does that.
Yeah, not this wide receiver group specifically, but wide receiver competition in general is always so fluid, because you see, well, what body type are they missing with outside of their first four. Well, they've got Hilton. He's the speeder. You know, Dorsett's kind of their backup, Hilton, so to speak. But then you get to where, why does it even matter? It doesn't. Rodgers was a perfect example of that last year because he was skinny. He was tall. His weight was down. But, you know, you get into a guy like that, and all it matters is, do you catch the ball? Do you run a good route? And can luck depend on you? You know, and that ultimately is what's going to win somebody that fifth roster spot. And, you know, fourth, fifth, I still think that's up in the air a little bit. But, you know as well as anybody, I'm a clear lover of Chester Rodgers. And, you know, Dorsett just hasn't done enough. You know, and I did do a piece on that some of his catch percentage stuff was a bit unfair because a lot of his targets were way off target, you know, or throwaways or something like that. But there's something that's there on other stuff as well that's, you know, he's not getting to the spot on time or something, but something that we can't possibly know as the observer. You know, something's different or wrong with his route. So this wide receiver group might be a great one. The next one is tight ends. That's going to be a fantastic one. I mean, they almost bypassed Swope as the number two, which has kind of been everybody's assumption that he's going to be the number two tight end guy. Williams is a guy who steps in, can block, doesn't have hardly any catches in his career, but he can catch the ball. He's athletic enough to be. But Darryl Daniels, a lot of people are liking his. You know, one of the things that George told us a couple weeks ago was that Daniels looked like a wide receiver with his height, and Bug Howard looked like the tight end. You know, it was kind of funny that those two were like that, but he said it wasn't the way they played. It was their size and their build and stuff like that. But Colin Jeter, I don't think Mo Alie-Cox is going to be pushing for a roster spot, to be quite honest with you. He just doesn't have the experience, obviously. But I think that they've got some real competition, definitely in depth chart rank on there for the tight end spot. So that'll be a fun one to watch as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that's going to come down to, like you said, down the depth chart, because you got Jack Doyle one, and I think Eric Swoop's probably the two, just considering how excited they are and how much they want to see what he can do. Mm-hmm. I think he'll probably be there, and then they'll probably keep three. And at three, at this point, it seems like Brandon Williams, and partly because you're going to want a blocker there. Doyle can do it all. He can catch and block. Swoop is your receiving tight end, and then Williams could be your blocker, but there are some guys, I mean, like you mentioned Daniels, I'm very interested in seeing what he can do. And then you said Mo Alie-Cox. I mean, I think he's more of a candidate for the practice squad. He's more of a developmental guy, kind of like Eric Swoop was, but there's going to be some interesting competition there down on the depth chart a little bit at tight end. And a lot of people will focus on, well, they got Jack Doyle, they got Eric Swoop, they're set. Well, there's going to be some interesting competition, if only for the number three spot. And then just to see how that plays out as well. And you know, I assume that Swoop will be the number two guy. He'll be that guy. But if he doesn't produce, how long do you wait? That's something I don't think we can know at this point. And the hope is that he'll produce. I think he probably will, at least as a receiver. But there's going to be some interesting things to watch, because outside of Doyle, there's really no one that's truly proven there.
Right, exactly. We get over to the offensive line. You know, we've seen that Jeremy Vunovic has moved into left guard when Muhort was out. So has Brian Schwenke to take that spot. So it was something that, you know, Vunovic being a left tackle was moving into the guard. So a lot of these guys, a lot of depth. We know about the Denzel Good thing, how he started at guard last year. A lot of people think that he was better served as a tackle or just whatever, a better depth guy. Didn't have a great year last year. LaRaven Clark came in, did phenomenal. Joe Haig was really a good Swiss Army knife last year for the Colts, really outplayed his rookie status. Ryan Kelly was another fantastic pickup, obviously. Costanzo was better than people want to admit. But just in general, is there anything along that offensive line there that you think will really surprise anybody aside from that? You know, because that top five, I think that's their five. I really do. I think that anybody else who's going to break into that really has to have an awesome, awesome summer at camp to get into that. But outside of that, do you think you see anybody really battling for any of that?
Well, I mean, I think even that top five is going to surprise a lot of national people who still think that Joe Haig's going to play tackle or whatnot. But besides for that, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Those five seem like they're the guys. And unless something surprising happens, they're going to be it. So I don't really see a ton of big surprises, at least for the people that have been following that Clark's at right tackle, Joe Higgs at right guard. I don't think there's going to be many surprises. I think what we could see is some of the depth guys competing for roster spots more than some might think. For example, Denzel Good, is he guaranteed a roster spot? Probably not. At this point, if you were to make a roster projection, he's on it. Mm-hmm. But is he guaranteed a spot? Probably not. So I think those are kind of more the questions that would be surprising, is if something like that did happen. I'm not predicting it, not saying it's going to, but I think there are some guys, at least when it comes to the depth, who aren't as secure as you might think. And so I think, you've probably got those five. They're locked into the roster. Brian Schwenke is probably locked into the roster. After that, I think it becomes a little less certain of who's for sure. I mean, Zach Banner, he's probably going to make it. But, I think that there are some depth pieces that are more up for grabs than some might think. That would be the only surprise, because I don't think that there's going to be a lot of intrigue going forward. The Colts are going to keep saying, oh, the right side of the line is open for competition. They're going to keep saying that, and they'll probably just keep having the same first team in practice every day. Mm-hmm. And it'll just become obvious that those are the guys. And so I think more interesting will be, well, who would slide into this position if so-and-so got hurt or things like that. You mentioned if Jack Muhort went out, who would be there? Would it be Brian Schwenke? Would it be someone else? Those are more of the things that are interesting. I don't think there's really any big surprises, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've talked about this in the past. I'm pretty excited about that offensive line this year. It looks like they've got some simple depth. And I think they've got a quality starting five right now who, is on the come up, in other words. But before we go any further, we got a couple call-ins, and Josh wanted to go through these with you. I'll let you kind of snag this one, and then we'll go back and forth a little bit and discuss the answers to these. So let's take our first call.
Hey, Matt, it's Mark Crowder from Columbus. Love your show. Try to tell people about it. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'd like to kind of discuss kind of our defensive strategy and sub-packages a little bit. If you could kind of go through your ideas around the 4-3, I know we've kind of gone back and forth on Twitter about that, but I'd love to hear you go more in depth around that. Maybe touch on the concept of too high safety with the personnel we have. What do you think about the Hooker-Butler tandem back there? I don't know. There are just some really exciting sub-package ideas that I'd love to hear you explore, and whatever other ideas you come up with. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Mark, for the call in. And he brings up a couple things that I think that we, and he's right, we've touched on this on the show in the past. But one of the more exciting things that he brings are, things that we've, that are exciting to think about with this new defense is how often will they run, a four-man front, who will be in that four-man front, whether when they are doing the two high, more likely, like he said, when Butler's back there and, Hooker will probably be the single high guy a lot for themselves. But this defense, these guys that have been brought in, some of the draft picks, they really do actually present some interesting combinations of talent on the field. Josh, you wanna knock a couple of those out?
Yeah, so, I think if I'm understanding the question correctly, it's about the Colts defensive system. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen, even in the last couple of years, is they've become more flexible, so to speak, about what they've been running defensively. So they're not, they run a 3-4, but they're not a strict 3-4. They're not even a 3-4 most of the time. I would say most of the time they're in the nickel.
Right.
And so, they're very flexible in terms of what they run. We haven't seen them run a 4-man front as often as, a 3-man front or things like that. But we've seen them use different formations. And even last year, we saw this a lot, for example, with Clayton Gathers coming up in the box. So we've seen them be willing to utilize their defensive scheme to fit their personnel more so than they have been at times. And hopefully that trend continues with Chuck Pagano being more flexible in terms of what he's going to be willing to do. So if these guys are better suited for a 4-man front, they've got some guys that they're going to be able to move in there and to do that. And I would think probably a lot of that would depend on how they're generating pressure. If they need to do that to get pressure, put a guy's at defensive end to rush in the traditional 4-3 system, so to speak, like they used to run with Freeney and Mathis, just for comparison's sake. If they need to do that to get pressure, hopefully they'll be willing enough to do so. So I think what we've seen is that they're getting more and more flexible with the way that they run it. And so there's still a 3-4 defense, but hopefully they'll be able to adapt and to utilize that more.
Yeah, I agree. And there was something I wanted to touch on with this. A lot of what the Colts are able to do is absolutely predicated on what the offense across the ball is doing.
Yes.
I mean, these guys are not going to be able to run very many 4-man fronts if they've got 4 wide receivers. You know, they're going to have to jump themselves into nickel. I mean, they could bring a guy down into the box, like you said. They could bring one of the outside linebackers in, which kind of brings me to something that is, I don't want to say confusing, I'm just curious about it, is they still have Basham listed on the roster as a defensive end. And I'm not sure that that's – I don't know whether that's intentional or, you know, they're intentionally misleading or if they actually see him as a defensive end. We won't really know that until camp to kind of see, do they have him down in a 4-point? You know, what do they see in him? Because another guy that really offers some of that defensive end stuff on a 4-3 setup is Sheard. Sheard is a guy who really – exploded off the line when he was in Cleveland, and he was a fourth down lineman, you know, ultimately there. So there are some exciting things what they can do up front, but you know, just like when the Colts struggled against Pittsburgh, especially a couple years ago when they were running the stacks on each side of the formation, you can't do a bunch of stuff up front with the front four as much as you can in other packages, because the Colts were terrible in that regard. You know, that just ate them up all game. And so you can't take the chance of adding another defensive lineman when you really need a guy who can cover in there for something. And so that's first. But they do with between the guys that they've been running in and out at nose tackle, the guys that they've been scooting around at 3-tech and 5-tech, there is a lot of combinations that could be really fun to watch. They've been moving, I guess Jonathan Hankins has been down there virtually in the 3-tech almost the entire time, wherein Al Woods has been the nose tackle. So you do have Henry Anderson and Langford, who are natural 5-techs. Those guys can do that as well, but you've also got some pieces you can move around. As far as the back end goes, I think that you agree that it's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, in my opinion, for Malik Hooker. I don't expect him to come out there and just be, you know, through the first 3 weeks of the season, them talking about rookie of the year. You know, I just don't expect that. He's got too much to do. He just didn't have enough experience in college. That doesn't mean I don't think he's good and he's going to be really good. That just means that I think that we need to temper our expectations for early season success as far as back there. There's really going to be an interesting dynamic with how they move Butler around. What if Clayton Gethers is able to play at all, and if so, how much? You know, Mathias Farley was really impressive in camp, and you know, TJ Green's still got a long way to go, but they've got some guys like Tyvus Powell that they got just recently off the waiver wire. Tyson Graham, from what I understand, played pretty well. So there's a lot of moving around on the back end that they can do, and that in itself, again, that's predicated on what the offense is doing. They're going to bring TJ Green down into the box to go after the passer. They're going to have, Gethers down there to help against the run more than likely, because TJ Green comes downhill to help against the run typically. They don't have him in there to be a run stopper. But Gethers is also their best cover guy back there, you know, whether nationally people want to acknowledge that or not. But so there's a lot of things that the Colts can do on the back end. But I think that the most interesting thing to me is to really see where Darius Butler ends up back there. He is a ball hawk. He struggles to be he likes to be physical, but he's scary when he's physical because he also gets hurt in the process. So there's a lot of fun on the back end of the Colts defense. But do you see anything, of particular nature that they're going to do anything maybe creative with those safeties to try to throw off other offenses?
I think really the whole safety discussion hinges on Clayton Gethers and his health, because he is so important to what they do with their safeties, because, you know, they love their interchangeable safeties. And part of that is Gethers, as you mentioned, can come down in the box and be a force against the run, and he can also cover. And so one of the things that affords the Colts is, for example, if it was Gethers and Hooker, who I think would be the two starting safeties if everyone's healthy, and again, that – the question about Darius Butler is very interesting. But if we're talking about Hooker and Gethers, you've got two guys there who are both able to cover. And so, I think the caller even had the question about more two high safety looks or something like that. Uh-huh. They would be able to do that. But you also, the offense wouldn't just be able to automatically assume that's what's going to happen, because Gethers can also come down in the box and play, which right. is crucial for the Colts defense to be able to disguise what they're going to do with what Gethers does. If you have Butler and Hooker in there, their strengths, both of them, are in coverage. And so what's going to happen there? And so I think that's going to be really the interesting thing is, if they have Gethers in there, I think we can see them get pretty creative. And they did at some points last year, playing him more as a linebacker or down in the box or uh-huh. things like that. I think that's really where their creativity is going to come. And I think they would love to be able to do that, to take some of the pressure off of Hooker, to allow him to play in coverage where he's most natural. And there's going to be some learning curve there, especially adjusting to the NFL speed. I mean, he hasn't even been on the practice field yet right. to get used to that speed. And so hopefully, you know, the plan is he'll be back in training camp and get adjusted to that. But there'll be some adjustment in coverage too, but that's where he's most natural. And I think if they allow him to do that as much as possible, they're going to see better results than trying to force him to be the all-around perfect safety right away. And a lot of that, again, depends on Gethers. And like you even mentioned, the offensive system that the other team is running impacts what they're going to do with their safeties. So if you're going to run a two-high safety look and they come out with a three- or four-wide receiver offense with a tight end who can also do damage underneath, then mm-hmm. it might not work out as well as if, you know, they're just in a standard two tight end, two receiver formation. So a lot of what they're going to do is dependent upon what the offense does. But in terms of how creative they get with safeties, I think a lot of that depends on Clayton Gethers and his health. If he can get back there, I think we'll see the Colts be pretty creative about how they use the three guys, being Gethers, Hooker, and Butler, and then also rotate in the others. If Gethers isn't in there, I think it'll become much more interesting, because you've got guys who are primarily coverage guys, which could that mean they bring in Mathias Farley or TJ Green more? Who knows? But I think that's what's really interesting, and it all depends on when Gethers gets back healthy.
Yeah, I agree. And something that you hit on there that kind of expand upon is a lot of what's going to depend on who gets some of these odd count snaps, second down, third down snaps, is going to really be who in camp, who in preseason, and who throughout the season as it goes forward shows that versatility of being able to do multiple things.
Mm-hmm.
Gethers, you know, is the ultimate use for him is to be able to use him in coverage. But like you said, bringing him down into the box, it's about timing. It's coming down half mm-hmm. a second before the ball's snapped so that the team doesn't have time to adjust to it, the offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of this stuff with these guys, you know, we need an inside linebacker who can prove that he can cover. We need outside linebackers who can drop into the zones and be effective still in the pass rush. And they've got to have a guy who can be one of those outside linebackers like Sheard, who I theoretically think can be another fourth lineman if it comes down to it. That these things will add a lot of versatility to this Colts defense if they can do it and if they prove that they can. And that will ultimately make them a really hard out, I think, when it comes to the season. You can look at this and be like, yep, they don't have, you know, this or that, or this roster's kind of blah, or just whatever thing. There's been enough done, in my opinion, to where they can really make teams think, and if they prove that they can play at a high level at some point, and if they can kind of outshine some of their offenses they're lining up against, they can win a lot of games. You know, they're going to have some games there in the first half of their schedule where they can really take some people by surprise. If they can do that, we could have an exciting season.
And I think one of the things that is kind of running throughout what we've been talking about is the coaching staff. And they've got as much young, moldable talent right now on that defense as they've had during the Chuck Pagano era.
Absolutely.
And so it's not perfect, but, you know, the defense is far from perfect. It's far from fixed, so to speak. But they've got talent there that if the coaching staff, Chuck Pagano, Ted Monachino, the other coaches, they're going to have to be creative about how to use guys. They're going to have to make sure they're using them to their strength, that they're getting the most out of this talent. I think that's as much of a key thing as anything, is how does this coaching staff maximize talent? And for the Colts, that's going to be a win-win, because either you see that Pagano and his staff isn't maximizing the talent and therefore should be gone, or you see, hey, this defense is coming along quite nicely. And so I think one of the key things to look at is how is this coaching staff going to utilize the guys that have now been put in place, and how are they going to develop them?
Absolutely. And I also still think that Clayton Gethers' health determines a lot whether the Colts use a little bit more cover three this year, which I think they're kind of designed to do. Well, thank you, Mark, for the question. Very good. I appreciate it. Now let's go on to this next one here. I thought this one was really interesting, and I'm anxious to see what your answer is for this one as well.
Hi, Matt. This is Brackett from Chicago. Great work with the show. Really appreciate all the time you put into it. It's been a lot of fun to listen to. I saw this topic online, and I was wondering your thoughts. If the franchise could bring back anybody in the history of the Colts to play on the team right now, who would they pick and why? I saw in the article they picked Bob Sanders, so I was just wondering who you would pick and what your thoughts are on that. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Josh, I love this question. I thought that was really, I hadn't seen that article, so that question kind of took me by surprise. But it doesn't surprise me that Bob Sanders would be a lot of people's picks as well, I think. Who would you drop into that bucket?
That's a great question. I think, let's see. The obvious,
it's not
the
easy.
Obvious, no, there's a lot of players I would want to take. Let's put it that way. The obvious answer would be someone like Peyton Manning or Marvin Harrison. Those guys are the Hall of Famers. But what does this team actually need? I mean, obviously, if you put Peyton Manning on any team, it's going to be better. I would probably go someone on the defensive side of the football just because of the way they're currently structured. And, I'd be tempted to pick Bob Sanders. It would probably be either Sanders or one of the pass rushers, Freeney or Mathis. Mm-hmm. And the real question with those two, with Mathis, we know how he played in the 3-4. And Freeney even, he showed more so after he left Indy, but he showed he could play in a 3-4 as well. That would be my main question, is how would Freeney fit into the defense. But if you have a guy like Dwight Freeney and you're not going to use him to his strength, that's on the coaching staff. So, I would probably go either one of those pass rushers or Bob Sanders. I think any one of those three, assuming they're in their prime and healthy, which is key for Bob Sanders, they would be an immediate difference maker on a defense that really doesn't have many of those. They don't have many elite players. And you put any of those, I think what this defense really lacks is a pass rusher. They've just hung their secondary out to dry for several years. They haven't been able to get after the quarterback, which would make me think, either Freeney or Mathis would be huge additions. But then Bob Sanders, he was just so good at a number of things and was a huge difference maker. So really either or any of those three guys really would be great. I don't know if you're going to make me pick one of them.
No, not necessarily. I won't make you do that. But Bob Sanders is a lot of fun. Obviously, my thoughts are, I want we what do we need? Like you said, we do have Frank Gore. We did draft a running back, but Edgerrin James, man, give me that dude on this offense. Because what were we doing when whoever that one guy was that we spent a first round draft pick on, a couple years ago, we ended up, what did we do with that? Every single one of us, and me included, I'll raise my hand in stupidity gladly because I was pumped about that, thought that we were getting another Peyton Edge combination in Indy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm as guilty of anybody. I have no problem admitting that I was just absolutely jumping up and down. And I'm pretty sure my oldest son was too, because that was going to be possibilities between Luck and Richardson. And we didn't get that. So Edgerrin James would be hard for me to turn away from. But another area, like you said, on defense, what do we need? We need a guy who can be a linebacker as well, get some pass rush. I don't think we got a ton of pass rush from Gary Brackett or Cato June, but those guys were phenomenal linebackers and, just averaging 70, 80, 90 tackles a season, couple passes defended. Those guys were really good. And, Cato June was even a guy who could put the ball back in the end zone and pick it up or pick it off. He ended up having several 4 or 5 interception seasons as a linebacker. And those might be the guys that I would go for. You know, when we look at, and I'm kind of sticking in the same era, but it's only because it's been the last time that we've had some of these guys that were quality, to be quite honest with you. And then you look at the cornerback situation. Yes, we have Vontae. We now have Quincy Wilson. But Nick Harper was the last guy the Colts drafted that was even around for more than a few years at cornerback. You know what I mean? He was okay. Mm-hmm. He was pretty decent. He got a lot of tackles. He put his hand on the ball. He defended some passes. I think he had a few years in a row where he was in between 15 and 20 defended passes a year. That's okay. I mean, we would settle for that right now. You know? I mean, give me a break. So I think there's a few guys, and specifically from that era, that I really like. Mm-hmm. But those guys would all be. But, man, you know, somebody says, hey, you want prime Dwight Freeney on your Colts team right now? I am not telling them no. You know, yep. So give me a ton of them. But, man, those are the core guys I think that I would really take. Those guys were a lot of fun, really good as far as I'm concerned at what they did. And, you know, what was Gary Brackett was undrafted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cato June was out of Michigan, I believe. Is that correct?
I believe so, yep.
Okay. So some of these guys weren't. You know, Cato June was not a guy that everybody's ranting and raving about. I can't say for what when he was drafted because I don't remember that, and I'm not going to try and pretend that I do. But these guys weren't, like, huge names nationally, and, man, they were, like, the core and the heart and soul of this Colts defense when they actually had a defense.
Yep. I mean, so, and if you're talking about who would be most exciting to watch, I'm just – imagining putting Edgerrin James in that offense. That would be fun to watch.
Oh, man. That would be a blast. That'd be, like I said, that would be impossible to turn off. I mean, like I said, I mean, I was literally, it was only a few years ago, but I was literally a 15-year-old little boy there for about 45 minutes after they announced the Trent Richardson trade. And I just could not believe my ears. And I thought it was the best move ever. I thought it was huge. You know, all the detractors and people were saying he wasn't any good. I'm like, man, the dude was injured last year. And well, not last year, but, you know, the year before he came to Indy, he was injured and still ran. He ran over Indy and was plowing people. He didn't have to have space. He was running over guys. He didn't have a ton of yards, but he was effective getting into the end zone. And I thought, that's what we need. We'll have a change of pace back. That'll be fine. But he's smart enough and good enough running back, especially if he's healthy, he's going to be fine. And, man, wow, that just did, that just, you know, it got ugly quick. But, yeah, give me Edge all day, every day. Give me a few of those guys for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
thank you for the question, man. That was a phenomenal question, actually. I don't even know. I'm sure that I've thought about that in theory, but never really, you know, pushed myself to come up with an answer. So if I'm coming up with an answer, I'm going Edgerrin James for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to think about.
It is. It was a great question. I really appreciate that. And, you know, Chicago is where he is from. Chicago is one of the best listeners of this podcast. So Indianapolis, Zionsville, you guys are going to have to pick it up a little bit because we can't have Chicago being some of our best listeners. But I appreciate you, Chicago. Make no mistake about it. So is there any other guys on the defense here, Josh, that kind of really are people that you want to follow into training camp that you think either are going to present serious camp battles or are going to be guys that you think are just going to ascend to the top of the list at their given position?
I think there's really too many to mention here. I mean, really every new guy that's been added to the defense almost, but I think really if we're talking about one area that I'm really interested to look at is the inside linebacker position. Just because we have no idea what's going to happen there. You have an idea, even outside linebacker. I mean, John Simon, Jabal Sheard, they're going to be kind of the guys there. There's going to be some other guys, Terrell Basham, and some of the other guys are going to be in the mix there. At inside linebacker, it seems like it's completely wide open. And it seems that Sean Spence and John Bostic are kind of emerging. They've both impressed in the offseason program. But there's a lot of guys there that – I don't think there's any one guy at that position that's great or that's going to be the answer to the position, but the overall, both spots seem pretty open, at least as open as any spot on the roster. So I'm really interested in seeing that. I'm interested in seeing how Anthony Walker there at that position performs, the rookie out of Northwestern. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy that could factor into the mix some. I think Sean Spence, we talk about you need linebackers who can cover. I think John Bostic has kind of been forgotten over the last several years. What can he do? Right. Edwin Jackson, Antonio Morrison, they're returning from after they started several games a year ago to mixed results. They got run over, completely run over in Oakland. It's like there's a lot of guys on that defense at inside linebacker. That's going to be a key position battle because we don't know who's going to wind up starting, but that's going to be important because you're going to need those guys to step up, particularly against the run, but also in the pass some too. You're going to need those guys to step up, and that seems to me, at least right now, to be the most wide open position battle on the roster. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. You're looking forward to seeing the rookies, obviously, how Quincy Wilson does. I'm interested in seeing what happens at nickel in the corner position. Yes. Because I really, I think the best option would be to play Hooker and Gathers at safety, assuming Gathers is healthy, and Butler in the nickel. But it seems that they're still saying Butler's a safety, we'll play him in the nickel if need be. So I don't know what they're going to do there. I think Nate Hairston, the corner they drafted out of Temple, it seems he's been playing a lot of nickel. Daryl Morris is another guy I think can play there. That's going to be a key spot because in today's NFL, the nickel corner spot is basically a starter. Whether right. you open the game in nickel or not, that I treat that as a starting position. And at mm-hmm. that spot, we really don't know what's going on. Butler's proven he can play there, but we don't know if he's going to be playing there often. So I'm really interested in seeing probably the inside linebacker position and the nickel corner position are probably the two battles that I'll be most interested in seeing because pass rush, that's important, but we kind of know what they have there. They've got guys who are solid, can do it, but there's not really a question about who's going to be playing there. I think there's a big question about who's going to be playing inside linebacker and nickel.
Right, and I agree with you on nickel. I really like Daryl Morris. I watched a little bit mm-hmm. of his film maybe a week or two ago, and I've spoke about this recently, but Daryl Morris was really impressive last year.
Yeah.
He was almost as impressive as I thought Rashawn Melvin was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was low-key, too, because I didn't really notice Morris as much as I did Melvin last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, unfairly to Morris, but he was pretty good, especially for a guy coming in and just, being on the team for 1 year and coming in and doing it. I actually think that Rashawn Melvin, and I wrote this, but I really believe it. I believe that Melvin has a legit possibility of starting the season as QB2 mm-hmm. or cornerback 2 and opposite Vontae Davis. But, they got rid of Reginald Porter, so that's not a guy who's going to be fighting for the roster anymore. You got Chris Milton there, Tevin Mitchell. There's Nate Hairston, really interesting guy as far as I'm concerned. I think that, and George spoke to this a couple times, that he thinks that he's going to be primarily a special teams guy, necessary mm-hmm. especially
yep.
to start. But I'm really interested to see how he develops through the year. Is he a guy who gets some snaps because he's developing in camp or in practice? I really think that he's a guy who can come in because he's got a lot of what the Colts need: ball skills, athleticism, height, speed. He's got a lot of it, and he's going to surprise some people too. But I agree with you. I think that nickel spot is really interesting. Inside linebacker is really interesting because one of the things that they really do have with Antonio Morrison and Edwin Jackson specifically, regardless if they start or not, those guys got a lot of really important experience last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it can't be a bad thing for your top four guys. Two of them got a lot of starting experience last year. Two of them have been injured but have shown flashes of being really good in the past. And you've got ultimately a hitter in Bostic, and you've got a guy who is very much a combination of everything that you want from the position in Sean Spence. I am also very curious, almost borderline excited to see Anthony Walker because I haven't really talked highly about him from the college mm-hmm. tape. I wasn't very impressed with him. I just didn't see the drive for him to be, what they keep talking about. But I'm excited. I like being wrong when I talk like that. I don't get me wrong. I want to be proven wrong. So I'm excited to see Anthony Walker. Luke Rhodes was a guy who got a lot of talk early in OTAs and he was moving in and out of the first and second team squads there at inside linebacker. So I think they've got a really deep group right there, and I think that's going to add for just more fun for training camp, you know, to watch that position as well. So that's a lot of it. And a lot of the, you know, I really just want to find out what defensive line we're going to have. Who are the three guys that are going to start there? You know, show me the three guys that are going to start and where, because that is really ultimately going to depend on who is like maybe a, you know, a low key unseen cut, you know, when it comes down to the roster at the end, because McGill, as much as everybody likes McGill and how much he plays and what he does, even though it doesn't show up on the stat sheet a lot, he could be a camp casualty, you know, when it comes down to the end. We just don't know. I mean, I don't perceive that to happen. I'm just saying Margus Hunt could be gone and they just signed him. Probably not, but you know what I'm saying. These mm-hmm. David Perry, I think that a lot of people would suspect that he's going to be gone, but he had a ton of tackles last year, man, like 47 tackles last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy from a nose tackle.
And I think a lot of the defensive line thing, we mentioned it earlier, is where are the guys going to play? Is Jonathan Hankins going to be a nose tackle, or is it going to be Al Woods or whoever it might be? I mean, we don't even know where the guys are going to play, much less who's going to be on the roster. So I think that's a really deep position, but it's a position that there's going to be a lot of competition, even though they're probably the starting level or the guys that are at the top of that position are better than the guys who are at the top of other positions on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of competition there, especially for roster spots, for playing time. I mean, Hassan Ridgeway could factor into that starting competition. Kendall Langford, what's going to happen with him? When's he going to be back healthy? There's a lot of questions at defensive line, and I think that's kind of getting glossed over because it's so deep and there's actual talent there, which can't always be said about some of the other spots, at least proven talent.
Mm-hmm. And one of the guys that I think that I don't know if I've even talked about him on the show, but I know that once the Colts signed him, I watched a lot of his tape. And one of the guys that I think is low-key really super interesting going into camp is Justin Thomas, the defensive end from Iowa,
mm-hmm.
or Iowa State, I mean. And, I mean, he's long, and I'm excited to see where he fits as camp starts to roll on. He's a very interesting guy to me to watch mm-hmm. in that group. So, youngster, and probably I think he's – I wouldn't say safe, but I think that I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being a practice squad guy, but I'd really like mm-hmm. to see him surprise some people and end up, you know, really fighting for that roster. And I wanted to ask you too as well, because this is something new this coming year, and we've talked about it in the past with other guests, but I want to get your opinion on it as well. Do you like the one cut bet down to the 53 now, or did you like the gradual, the two-step approach?
I really like the change to one cut. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think, especially, it never really made a ton of sense to me. I mean, I get why they did it. But mm-hmm. to have the first roster cut down before the fourth preseason game when most of the backups play significant minutes, that never really made a ton of sense to me because you're going to be resting your starters and playing your backups. So I think what this does is it's going to give those bottom of the roster guys one last chance to compete for those spots. It's going to give them another game and several more practices to be able to say, hey, I belong either on the 53 man or on the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
And odds are it's not going to change much from if they just had another cut, but we might see some guys who in the fourth preseason game just really, really impress, and maybe they'll earn a spot as one of the 63 guys on either squad. And so I think it's a good thing. I think it'll give guys more competition. The downside is that it'll make that one cut day a really significant day in the NFL because there's going to be a ton of guys losing jobs. And you never like that. Right. Coaches hate it. Teams hate it. You hate cutting all those guys at once. And I could even see a situation where teams start cutting guys before they have to.
Right.
So maybe they don't bring a 90-man roster into that final preseason game. Maybe they already have cut a few guys. But what it gives you is the flexibility to say, we want to see this guy in one more game to see what he can do. We're going to be resting our starters anyway, so now we've got a more full roster to be able to say, let's give these guys one last chance to compete, maybe even on special teams. I think it's a good move because it's going to give those guys one last shot, and maybe they'll still wind up being cut anyway, but it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, think about it this way. You're going to I mean, so you're going from 90 to 53. So you're going, mm-hmm. you're cutting 37 guys from 32 teams in one day.
Mm-hmm.
That is a ton of free people. That's like almost 24 teams worth of players of 53 man rosters. I mean, mm-hmm. because they've got to be cut, you know, to be pulled back into the practice squad. So people don't forget that, you know, it's not like they just mm-hmm. say you're staying, you're these 63 are staying. They've got to cut their practice squad guys yep. that they want before they come back. So this is, none of it's a given. And the one I've talked about this just recently, but I really think that a lot of the guys, not a lot, there's going to be some guys at a few different positions on this team that aren't on the roster come cut day, and then, you know, we're going to end up bringing some guys in from other teams, and
absolutely
there's going to be some fun additions, I think, still to come. I really do, because there's always surprise cuts. There's always mm-hmm. surprise cuts, whether it's a young guy might be out playing a guy, but, you know, you've got to think roster-wise, you know, competition at certain positions. If certain guys are cut at cornerback and they've got a cornerback that may be the fourth corner on theirs, but he's better than the third on ours, they're going to bring him in, because that's all exactly what Chris Ballard has been talking about. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it recently as well, about how much Ballard really believes in this competition stuff, and so mm-hmm. do the teammates. And, you know, he said that he's going to be, the locker room will be watching him. So everything from what we talked about right off the jump, from the quarterback competition, has to be a real competition, because these guys are all watching, and they want to know that if they play their butts off in camp and in preseason, that they have a chance to make this roster legitimately, not because who they are, where they came from, or anything else. And that's important mm-hmm. to this team, and that is how you – that's how you build a roster. I mean, that's just how you do it. You don't want to see certain guys not go. But look, if T.Y. McGill isn't – I mean, as much as we love him, if he's not the guy that they want him to be in preseason, he's going to go. He's going to be gone.
Yeah, and just mentioned that competition thing. I love, there's a quote from Chris Ballard this offseason where he said, you can't preach competition and then not live it. And right. what he was saying is, if you're going to say competition, 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 which we've heard all over, you're going to have to live it out. And he gave the example of last year in Kansas City, they drafted Kavari Russell. What was it, second or third round, something like uh-huh. that. And they cut him. And yep. he's like, it's because this guy outplayed him. And we were living out that competition thing. So I think you're absolutely right. They're not going to be done just when – they're not going to just cut the roster down to 53 and be like, we're done. He said they're going to be very active at the cut-down point and throughout the season of making moves. And that's another thing. We'll see with the one cut-down, we'll see a lot of guys being claimed that mm-hmm. next day. Yep. I mean, it might not be more than normal if you combine the two cuts together, but we're going to see a – high volume of guys who are claimed the next day, and probably the Colts are going to be pretty involved in that, I'd imagine, because yeah, they're going to be looking to add more talent and bring guys in. And what Rashawn Melvin, Daryl Morris were guys that they got last year in that sort of situation, weren't they?
Uh-huh, absolutely.
So it's like, you know, you can find talent there that's going to wind up helping you a lot. And so I think Chris Ballard is going to really try to do that at the cutdown point.
Yeah, I think he is too. I think he and Dobbs and all the other guys that he's brought in mm-hmm. already, they're all going to be sitting by the waiver wire. You know, I mean, that's a ridiculous thing to say. There is not actually a waiver wire, but you know what I'm saying, that they're yep. sitting on. But you know what I mean? They're going to be watching for transactions coming across the wire, and they are going to hit it up. And mm-hmm. we're going to see, I think we're going to see a significant difference. I'd say maybe 5 to 7 guys, you know, possibly get claimed, depending on what it goes. I mean, that seems like a really high number, but it would not surprise me a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, there'll be a lot of guys claimed, and even then, there's always those sort of roster maneuvering techniques that teams pull. Like last year, the Colts kept Stephen Morris as their third quarterback
mm-hmm.
a couple of days because they didn't right. want to expose him to that first initial waiver wire. You know, teams are trying all sorts of stuff, so we'll see what the Colts do, but I imagine they'll be very, very active there within the first couple of days of that roster cut down and waiver claim and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, me too. Josh, it was a lot of fun talking with you tonight, man. I appreciate you stopping by.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
thank you guys for listening. Make sure you guys follow Josh. Still a great mind for anything football, especially Colts, and you know, also Notre Dame. If you guys like those guys, if you yeah. he's definitely a big Notre Dame fan. So make sure you guys are following Josh at Josh Wilson SB on Twitter. Josh, is there anything that anybody can follow you outside of this right now? Because I mean, we already prefaced the show with the news for the most part, but what else are you going to be getting into that you'll be sharing on Twitter? Anything?
Well, I mean, that's where you can find me, is follow me on Twitter, and you'll be able to keep up with kind of what's going on. And so I don't have anything in terms of in the works of online presence or anything like that that people can follow yet. But for sure, if something comes up, I'll mention it on Twitter. So if you follow there, you'll be able to keep up with my life and what's going on, and we'll still talk Colts quite a bit.
Absolutely. So thank you again, Josh, for listening. Thank you guys for the call-ins. Make sure if you guys want to do that, that you guys are using the call-in number. It's 574-516-2881. We'll answer the show or answer the calls like we did tonight. Whether it's me or a guest or whoever, we'll get to them and answer them the best that we can. Thank you guys. Continue to give those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Those are great. And our show numbers continue to go up, all because of you guys and you sharing the show. We really appreciate it. It does nothing but help get this show noticed more on a larger platform, and gets our Colts talk a little more noticed. So I will talk to you guys all. Thank you again, Josh. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.